do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
The brilliant shot. Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He yeah! scores! Australia have got it!
Waiting 24 hours has certainly given us a little bit more content, that's for sure.
I had like an hour and a half worth of content anyway.
I know, that's the thing.
If you're going to talk about the fucking AFL Grand Final for half an hour, then I've got nothing. I might just have to walk out because I stopped watching at half time because it was so dull.
I found it a bit more compelling than that. I thought it was a pretty good game, actually, but...
Maybe it was the second half that was compelling because it was one... Because it was a bit like that that GWS game where it was just appalling footy for the first half, and then at the back end it got really tense and you know, tightly contested. People saying, "What a fantastic game!" I was like, "Do you remember how bad the football was in the first half? It was just a whole lot of fucking seagull scrapping shit." But it's funny how the narrative always gets driven by what happens at the end, not what happens at the start.
Well, the second half, the Bulldogs won it with their tackling, I reckon. Sometimes you can see when a team just swarms in defence, and you know it's not necessarily silky skills or anything, or particularly great attacking football, in any code, but just absolute swarming. We are not going to give in defence, and they made like three or four. Just big tackles. But the problem, like, one of the reasons I sort of got out of AFL a bit was...
Can I just stop you there for a second? Mm-hmm. This is the Balls Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, in case you were wondering. He's Bezo and I'm the Doc, and we love cold opens.
Yeah.
Continue.
So the reason that I got attracted to AFL in the first place was it was like a very simple premise. If you went for the ball and had nothing but eyes for the ball, you would get rewarded. If you then tried to hold on to the ball too long and someone tackled you and you couldn't get rid of it, you got punished. And like, that was a really simple thing. It was like, well, if you want the ball more and you're willing to take the risk, then it's sort of high reward. And
So basically you saw it as a philosophy for life?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. I just really liked it, especially when, you know, guys like Voss were just head down over the ball, complete blinkers on, and they knew that...
Didn't care about the CTE they were going to end up with.
Yeah, that's probably true. But that they knew that they were going to be rewarded. Now...
All football has that problem. Even soccer has that problem now, is that all the things we thought were fantastically cool in the 70s and 80s and 90s right now are kind of like, oh, shit, you fucked yourself up for life doing that.
But it's not so much that they've changed the game to protect that I find hard is the person going for the ball's not always rewarded. So the guy gets to the ball first, someone comes in second and smashes him sort of illegally, or what I used to think of as illegally, and he wouldn't get a free kick. So I'm like, well, where's the incentive for the really good player to go in hard after the ball? And then the second part of it was, a guy would have the ball and he would get tackled and have three or four goes at disposing of it, and the umpire would just come in and ball it up. And I think that's the worst thing for AFL, because what you want is...
They don't seem to call holding the ball as much as I remembered from... I mean, I've been watching this game on and off, let's be fair, but for more than 30 years, and it doesn't seem to be something that gets blown up as much as it might have used to have been. And if it has, I don't give a fuck. Don't at me. It's a shit sport. I'm not interested. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to our non-existent Victorian followers.
But I actually think when you pay holding the ball a lot, it makes the game work, because then you're incentivized to move the ball all the fucking time. So I just thought that the balance was wrong, but I still found it. It's the first sort of full or semi-full because I've got three kids running around game of football I've watched in ages. And it was close, and there was definitely the teams were well matched. I agree it was pretty scrappy in the first half, but I thought in the second half, I don't know if wanting it more is the thing, because both sides want it, but the ability to sort of execute was better for the Bulldogs defense. So, and that actually ties into something I wanted to talk to you about in the NFL, was should the NFL give more rule, I don't know whether protection's the right word, but should they make it so that the quarterbacks can look better?
Well, they already are pretty much untouchable. I mean, you can't so much as ruffle the quarterback's hair after he's passed the ball without incurring a roughing the passer penalty. So the rules are already heavily skewed in favour of protecting the Golden Boys. I'm not sure much more you could do. It's not that's the reason that there's so many bad quarterbacks. It's that defences are cleverer than the available skill set. There's a very, very small number of really talented quarterbacks who can single-handedly work their way around complex NFL defences.
Yeah.
Now, but having said that, if you're playing an ordinary NFL defence and you've got a strong game plan and a good running back and some good wide receivers, then a mediocre quarterback can do a good job. And we've seen that quite a bit recently.
Well, it's interesting talking to one of the old guys at Touch Football, and he was sort of like, he didn't like watching modern touch because they just don't run through the line as much. And that's exactly right, because defences have just got so sophisticated at defending space and not sort of, you know, defending a man and allowing the athletic mismatch to work. If you're defending man on man and the guy across from you is a better athlete and smarter, then you're not going to win that competition.
You're not going to bust it off. You know what I mean? We've talked about this with rugby league too. The line break is not nowhere near as common as it used to be, except if you're getting really quick sets and you can get everyone running backwards. But the one out, you know, you're attacking a line and breaking it, that just doesn't happen anymore because the defences are so much better at, you've got better athletes who can cover more ground, who are more positionally aware about sliding across or, you know, going up and in, whatever the methodology they're using is. And it's just, you've got to use other methods to unlock defences these days. And that makes it a different product. And you can't just wish yourself back to the old product, because you're going to have to, you know, undo 15 years of sports science and nutrition and training and coaching and tactics.
What you need is a league willing to go, like a league office that has enough power and enough balls to go.
We're only playing people under 5'10".
Yeah. Well, so you'd be in. You know, the NRL doesn't have that power. You know, like even if they wanted to make the rule changes, even if they thought it would revolutionise the TV product and make it a much more popular game, the fact is that the clubs, have too much of a stake in the way that the games run. So they're not going to, you know, they're not going to let that happen, because they've invested a lot in that sports science and in playing the way that they want to play. They're just not going to let it happen, I don't think.
No, the interest, that's, and I mean, the product is selling. They don't have a problem with people watching football.
No.
If there are older dudes who prefer it the way it was, well, we all remember things more rose-tintedly than they actually were.
That's true.
Rugby league in the 80s wasn't anywhere near as good as we remember it as being. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's easy to cut together highlights. You know, you can cut together highlights package of any season, of amazing things that have happened. And you just go, oh, wow, wasn't rugby league fantastic in year 19X or 2000X? Like even 2000.
I don't think 2000 with the unlimited interchange. That would have been...
I was going to say, like, I reckon even that year that the Broncos won, which is probably one of the worst years of football I've ever watched, I reckon you could probably creatively cut a good package together of
yeah,
a minute, tries a of minute the or 2 minutes. Yeah, tries, big hits, you know.
It'll just be diluted out quite a lot more.
So
when the when our lovely listening audience hears this, it's obviously going to be post the ARL, the AFL Grand Final. It may also be post the NRL Grand Final, which is on tomorrow night our time. Is it possible to get this up before then and now, or is your internet not likely to?
No.
We will attempt to get. You might be hearing this before the NRL Grand Final. You might not. The NRL Grand Final this year is between syphilis and chlamydia. Actually, no. It's Cronulla got upgraded from chlamydia to gonorrhea, I should say, because they've got the clap. I don't know if you saw this story, but Cronulla, not content to beat Canberra, decided to steal its Viking clap. So the Cronulla fans have now claimed that the Viking clap as the shark clap. So that belongs to them now. Which is ironic because cultural appropriation doesn't seem to be a thing that's very big for Cronulla. They don't really like the foreigners. The thing about this Viking clap is that, I mean, it came to prominence through the Iceland football team at Euro, and was probably around before then, and it's been picked up by everyone from the Minnesota Vikings of the NFL to, fuck, I saw an Israeli team doing it in the Europa League. So it's as ubiquitous as the dun 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 that people have been doing for years from the White Stripes Seven Nation Army. So it's not like they're stealing a thing that's Canberra's IP, but so fucking petty and so fucking Cronulla to steal another football team's crowd thing, having beaten them just to fucking rub their noses in it. It's just they're just such fucking tremendous human beings, the Cronulla supporters and the Cronulla football team.
See, I don't have your traditional dislike of Melbourne, probably because it's stacked full of Queensland players who I quite
like. Yeah, it's purple Queensland. I think Errol said it on their pod this week. It's purple Queensland. And that's, you know, it was always purple Queensland. I think it was more because of it. You have to remember, it came into existence and then they took my club away. So, you know, obviously there's a whole narrative around Rupert Murdoch taking away my club in order so this club can exist, sort of thing. So you can see why I'm not super keen on purple Queensland. But having said that, they're not the Sharks, who you'd have to actively hate because they're terrible, terrible people and terrible footballers.
And Slater's not playing this year, which makes Melbourne much more likeable. So,
well, yeah, but they're still the Storm Bots. They're still a bunch of emotionless, reasonless fucking Terminators. It was funny because I was listening. It's nice when you get name dropped on other podcasts, but it's also funny. Shout out Drive Through Pod. It's also fun when you get joke dropped in that you know you've given a podcast material, but they haven't named you because Errol were talking about some of their followers, you know, because they've been running this Stormbot meme for basically since the mid aughts, and when the storm game was on last week, we were sort of tweeting stuff like. Cameron was Cooper Cronk, who is clearly a robot, came up short of the try line, and I might have tweeted something like 404 error try line not found. And at the end of the game, he was consoling some of the people, some of the guys on the other side who'd lost. And I said, "Well, that's just down to Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics. You know, you've got to do no harm to humans.
Do no harm to others." Yeah.
So my jokes made their podcast, even if we didn't get a name drop, but.
I just want to jump back to the AFL for a second because...
Sure enough.
Sydney, I find South. Clubs...
I South? Find clubs get it in, right. South Melbourne.
I find clubs in a salary-capped league that have continued success. Like, everyone sort of goes, oh, Sydney, they just have success because they've had this concession and that concession.
Cost of living! Understanding the fact that it actually costs more to live in fucking Sydney than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And then the Brooklyn Nets are a perfect example of you can have more money than anyone else in a competition, and that does not translate to continued success.
Or any success at all. Ever.
The thing is, Sydney were one of our traditional rivals when when Brisbane were coming through. I think they were actually, they were sort of up a little bit before us, and then they were, you know, definitely sort of in that top four range the whole time Brisbane were good.
Certainly, and yeah, because their first attempt at the flag was sort of 96, and then they came back in 05 was when they actually made the big dons.
But they've never really been down. And you just look at Brisbane and how abjectly crap they have been for such a long time and will be into the future. Don't get me wrong, they're not going
to bounce back anytime soon. And a lot of that's down to board and management, mismanagement, rather than necessarily loss of concessions. Although, having said that, the concessions were peeled off them, as I understand it. They don't have the cost of living stuff that they, admittedly, you can live in Brisbane for a lot cheaper. But
they did have those concessions taken, but it's instructive on how well the Suns basically retooled. Like, you know, they lost their cost of living, and they got told when they traded for Franklin that they wouldn't get a draft pick this year, and they just went, okay, we'll just continue being good some other way. I don't know whether it gets celebrated enough, the fact that you're just there or thereabouts year after year after year, and how fucking hard it is.
Well, Sydney only exists to, Sydney's success is fine as long as they don't actually succeed. In the presence of any Victorian teams. It was instructive how much South Melbourne talk there was this week on Twitter. South Melbourne. You know, the last time they were South Melbourne? Last time they were South Melbourne, the Canberra Raiders did not exist.
Yeah, that's right.
They came into existence the year that the South Melbourne Swans moved to Sydney. And that's how long these fucking punishers have been banging on about it.
Actually, Sportress this week tweeted about the 94 Canberra Raiders side and the fact that Ruben Wickie was one of their centres. And I'm just like,
shit.
That just cracks me up. And it's not like he was like a big sort
of. That was before he got huge. You know, he was much bigger when he was playing as a prop for the Warriors. If international listeners, and ironically, this would be for a lot of New Zealand listeners who actually are aware of this. Ruben Wickie went on to be a prop forward for the Warriors in their fairly successful middle or to late odds teams.
And an icon of their team.
And of course, he won things with the New Zealand Kiwis. I would say the New Zealand Kiwis have long been the more successful rugby league team compared to the New Zealand Warriors.
Yeah. Well, which is bizarre considering that you essentially added a couple of names to the Warriors and that was the Kiwis for quite a while.
Well, there were a lot of them who were, the dudes who were Super in League. Melbourne. Sorry, in Sydney. What's the word I'm looking for? The Sydney, but it's on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. England.
England.
So, post-mortem on the Canberra Stormbot game. The Canberra versus Melbourne game was actually really, really quite good. But it really just came down to the Canberra's outside backs just kept fucking up. Edric Lee and the fullback, whose name momentarily escapes me, just made enough little errors, and you just can't do that against the relentlessness of the Stormbots. You just can't do it.
That's what they rely on.
Bellamy's game plan since the day he got the gig. You just keep grinding.
The way to beat a team like Melbourne, though, is you play free and loose, and if it comes off...
Yeah, your ceiling's higher than theirs.
Yeah, that's right. Cause we played...
But Cronulla aren't going to do that, and that's why Melbourne's going to win this grand final tomorrow.
We played a junior carnival where we had a really good coach, and he just had like a really simple game plan, and we just, we did two or three things, but we executed them really well. And we were going along swimmingly until we played this Gold Coast side that was 90% Fijians, and they just would not fucking put the ball on the ground. Like, it was just pop and throw and wrap and pass, and it just drove us up the fucking wall.
It was like
and
Newcastle in the late 90s where they would just chuck it and then just keep chucking it, and they were not going to go to the ground.
And then within 7 minutes, we were trying to play like they were trying to play, but nowhere near as well because we just didn't have the skill set.
Just couldn't do it that way.
Yeah, and they just beat us cold. And like we didn't lose another game for the whole tournament, but it was just so...
Hashtag individual it just, brilliance. It'll, it, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just so hard to match that. Like it was like sort of being spun around three times and then pushed onto the field and here you go, play now. But yeah, if it doesn't come off, if those little pop passes and you know flicks go to ground, then all of a sudden it's really easy to beat them because you just get so much of the ball,
particularly in touch where it, you know, ball can't hit the deck. Who do you see winning the National Rugby League Grand Final tomorrow evening, Mr. Beasley?
Well, every time I mention the word Cronulla Sharks, I just get this mist of red come over my eyes. So
gag reflex, just start bile coming up the back of your throat. Well, that's how it is. And it'll be, I mean, the Stormbots should win. And it's funnier if the Stormbots win because that keeps the whole narrative about Cronulla going for another year. You know, it's funnier if Cronulla suck. The whole Jack Gibson, you know, waiting for Cronulla to win a flag is like waiting for, not a flag.
Harold Holt to come.
Leaving the porch light on for Harold Holt. I was thinking about Jack Gibson because there was some terrible Guardian take that Bellamy's the greatest coach in the history of rugby league because of what he's achieved with the Melbourne Storm. And I thought, well, he's not even the greatest rugby league coach of the current era, let alone being better than Jack Gibson and company.
He's one of the best club coaches for sure, but Bennett's got him cold on the rep stuff.
Bennett's got him cold on the history, you know. I mean, Bellamy's only ever done it with one club.
Yeah,
and which is fantastic. But what else you got, bro? I mean, you'd be the greatest ever. You've got to move beyond your system.
I did see something on Facebook, and it's a little bit trite, but a little bit true. And it was Canterbury cheated, won a premiership 2 years later. Melbourne cheated, won a premiership 2 years later. Cronulla cheated, ?
True, and the way they cheated was different. They didn't cheat on, I mean, what you're talking about is Canterbury cheated on the salary cap.
Cap.
In 02 and then won in 04. Melbourne cheated several times on the salary cap and won and then got them taken away. I don't think Melbourne have won since the salary cap stuff was taken off them, though. I thought all of those totals have been vacated.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So
the way Cronulla cheated was by injecting shit into their players in a very dodgy way that may, and this is alleged and this is question mark and blah, 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 but it may have resulted in the deaths of one of the players.
And there's no way of knowing how long that benefit lasts.
Oh, you make yourself huge, you'll be huge for a while.
Yeah, or, you know, if you build the ability to be able to train for longer into your system, like if you get used to training that hard for that long, even when the peptides or whatever they are wear off, You are still used to pushing your body to that limit.
Yeah.
It has allowed you to build a capacity that you wouldn't have got naturally.
It's not like the turbo button on Turbo Outrun. It's not as though when you take it away, it no longer gives you boost. The boost sticks around. Cronulla are fucked, eh? They are fucking fucked. In fact, the old mate with the free Kieran Loveridge is still trying to free Kieran Loveridge. It's,
oh, really?
Michael Ennis is still sledging people. They're just... I will thoroughly, and just as much as I will enjoy it when the Great Western Sydney Giants win the next 9 flags in a row and and make every Victorian AFL fan heroin dependent. I was amazed. It was a good reminder last week of how much Great Western Sydney are resented for the concessions they've got. And ironically, I think that's a little bit like the way Melbourne were resented by NRL fans in the early days, because it felt like they were getting a lot of concessions that the other clubs weren't getting. In Melbourne's case, it was because they were owned by the comp and they existed at the expense of clubs that had to fold or merge. I mean, Melbourne were ring-fenced, whereas, you know, North Sydney had to merge with Manly and Wests had to merge with Balmain and Souths had to fuck off entirely, that sort of stuff. Greater Western Sydney have got a whole lot of advantages over some of the quote-unquote traditional Victorian clubs. So and because they're kind of a plastic startup that have been bankrolled by the league at the expense of these core clubs, you get the same jokes rolled out about the supporter base. And I don't know whether you saw this last week. They were sort of making the same jokes about, you know, that they none of them, the crowd's tiny and most of them are from somewhere else and none of them actually know anything about the game. And I was like, we were making the same jokes about Melbourne in 1999. Maybe you guys can get some new material.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, it's the same. I had a little argument with Pat, who's filling on the podcast, about the women's AFL. And he was sort of going that really strictly capitalist.
They should get paid what they're worth. We don't know what they're worth yet because no one's actually made the product yet.
No, but more like, you know, they shouldn't be asking for
a living wage.
A certain amount of press coverage. And I think he was... I think a lot of people are under the misunderstanding that these players are asking for the same amount of pay as the men, and they're not. They're asking for
minimum wage. You know,
enough so that they don't have to work while they're playing. But I said, flip it around and look at it at from the AFL's perspective, as or cricket, or anyone that's running a women's league. Look at it as 50% of our potential fan base are female. So if we want to keep them engaged, we might need to have this product. And if it loses money hand over fist for years after year, but we keep them coming to AFL games where they buy, you know, they buy their sons a T-shirt or a flag or a cap or whatever, and, you know, they keep people in the game, then it doesn't matter if it loses money.
Because how the fuck is it any different from what they did with GWS or the Gold?
Yeah, exactly.
They pulled up. They were loss leaders. They were literally loss leaders.
Even in cricket, like, you cannot have test cricket, you cannot have your main product without the loss leader that is state cricket. State cricket doesn't make any money, but the top version.
But it's absolutely, well, the difficulty with that one is it is absolutely necessary. We've had this discussion before.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't absolutely need women's football to play men's football, but it's absolutely a good idea if you want to. Just the same, you don't need a club on the Gold Coast, but it's a really good way of making more money and expanding your footprint. So do it.
That's right.
Tough shit.
Yeah, if you want to keep as many fans, like, you're basically trying to make sure that every person that could possibly be a fan of your sport can be a fan of your sport. So you need to do some things that aren't going to, in a strictly capitalist sense, make lots of money. You can't just have Collingwood, Hawthorn, Carlton, and West Coast in the and have an AFL competition. It just won't work.
Well, the Victorians don't want West Coast. It's funny that the Andrew Tate, the editor of the Sunday Age Sports Section, tweeted a photo that he'd found. He found like the 1981 VFL season guide. And it had all the Melbourne and, you know, all the Victorian clubs, Melbourne plus Geelong. And I think I retweeted and said, this is exactly how most Victorian fans would like the comp still to be. Because it's exactly as it was before they took Sydney and put them in, they took South Melbourne and put them in Sydney, and they expanded to the West Coast, and they expanded to Adelaide and all those other things. You know, they kind of want it to be the way it was, but they still want the economic advantage of the larger comp. And I know there are rugby league fans who feel the same way, but because there's so much of the power base is in Queensland, there's an understanding that no, this is a national comp, or at least a New South Wales Queensland national comp. That's half the country anyway, so that's kind of national, international if you count New Zealand.
Well, I think yeah, the next expansion they'll make will be into Papua New Guinea, from what I've been seeing of the Q Cup games there.
If they can do it in a way that is, I know this sounds very first world problems, but in a way that's safe, and not just safe in terms of player safety, but in terms of safe from corruption, you know, safe from you know, players being got out to chuck games and stuff.
It's not like that doesn't exist in rugby league already. Speaking of corruption,
speaking of Eddie Hayson, yes.
I was going somewhere completely different. Have you been polishing up your football manager's resume? Because it sounds like you'll be the only one left to coach any English Premier League.
The fat Yobbo instead of the fat Sam. This is true. So Sam Allardyce was caught on tape by the Telegraph newspaper, the Torygraph, banging on about how great he was and how the FA were a bunch of knobs and how he knew clever ways of getting around third-party payment rules and all this sort of stuff. So basically it's all about middlemen making money out of transfers. That's basically the crux of all this sort of shit. He didn't actually do anything illegal. He just made himself out to be a complete cock. And as a result, the FA told him to FO, which is a real shame. But it's not the first time that an English coach has been set up by a dodgy media. Sven-Goran Eriksson was done in the same kind of way. And it's probable that Sam will barely have enough time to go to the beach and come back before he'll have another gig in the Premier League, because his old club, Sunderland, are in the relegation zone and the manager, David Moyes, is having a shit time. It's entirely possible they could flick him on. Or he could go to the club he was at before that, which was my club, West Ham United. Slaven Bilic is having a shit time. In fact, I was considering starting a Kickstarter to have Slaven Bilic replaced by Roy Slaven, just because, you know, his methods are a bit 1967, but, you know, at least he'd get him going in the right direction, you know, one in, all in, win the match and all that kind of stuff. So he's not going to be short of gigs. Ryan Giggs is another guy who's lining up for all these sorts of opportunities as well. The Swansea gig is probably the first one that will be available, and that should be available sometime next week.
Will the FA do anything with this? Will there be any attempt to clean up the game, or will it just be,
Well, there was nothing illegal uncovered. It was just that there are a whole raft of para and quasi-legal ways that third parties can take an interest. So the problem is about when a player goes from, you know, bumfuck nowhere, like, you know, some other country, into the European system. There were systems whereby people would sort of invest in them, and they would take almost like an interest in them, and they would get payments down the road. The other part of it is also about getting a kickback if a player gets transferred to the team that you're in control of. Say I'm the manager at Sunderland, just to pull out a name. Sorry, Sunderland. And some dude's manager there's a transfer across, you know, wants me to, you know, he's trying to get me to buy his player. And I say, look, give me a bit under the table and I'll make sure it's done. And I get my little bit under the table. That's dodge. But that's it's all off the table. What they talk about, their version of the brown paper bag, Parramatta style, is called a bung. And that's really what we're talking about here.
But my question would be,
it's bigger than the FA to solve, is basically the short answer to the question that you had 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, my question is more, if you're running a team, if you own a team that's in that middle to lower zone, and your manager's taking, you know, a cut to transfer a player that might not necessarily be the best player for your club to stay out of the relegation zone.
I don't think that's even the problem. Yeah.
Okay, so they're not picking player X over player Y because you know that you're going to get a kickback.
I think
player
the expectation
X.
is that all players are worth X. I think there's so much of it around. And that's certainly the impression I get from this and previous thing. I mean, this is not the first time Allardyce has been snookered by the tabloid press over this sort of stuff. About 10 years ago, he had a similar kind of situation. He took the BBC to court and won because they couldn't prove anything. But it's the same kind of shit. But the thing is, though, that it doesn't materially impact the product on the field. It's just graft and kickback. Mm. So it's the sort of thing that fans can easily just go, I don't give a fuck. You know, I just don't care.
Unless, you know, they're earning, you know, $500,000 from kickbacks when the guy paying for the tickets, you know,
Well, earning that's
60 grand a year.
It might all add a few percent to your ticket price, but people are more interested in the football. Leicester City are doing something a little bit interesting that I haven't seen before. I've never seen a team run dead on a Premier League season. Running dead might be a little bit rich, but what they've done is, and to be fair, Claudio Ranieri said they would do this. They said, okay, job one is to survive in the Premier League. We're going to get our 40 points. We're going to not get relegated. Job two, get through to the second round of the Champions League. And the subtext is, we can survive in the Premier League any year. You know, any year you like, we can finish mid-table in the Premier League. Whoopee-doo. We can finish 10th instead of 17th. Don't give a fuck. How many times are we going to get a crack at playing in the Champions League? So they have either consciously or subconsciously targeted and focused on the Champions League. And why this has been really obvious is that they got smashed last week in the Premier League. Man United did them over 4-1. And a couple of weeks ago, the same sort of thing had happened. But it had happened immediately before a Champions League week. And Leicester are unbeaten in the Champions League. In fact, they've got a 100% record. They beat Club Bruges 3-0. They beat Porto, who are two-time European champions, 1-0 at their joint. It's as though that maybe they're not... It's not that they're throwing their Premier League games, but they might be going into them with maybe... And they're rolling out pretty much the same squad, but I think they're rolling out with maybe 5 to 10% less intensity, and that's enough to get you done in the Premier League, because the minds are on the midweek games that are... the opportunity that they might never have again.
They're not splitting their focus.
They tend to roll the same team out because they've got a fairly shallow squad compared to the big clubs like Man United or Man City. They just tend to roll the same, maybe not the same 11, but the same sort of 14 out every time. And that same 14 are probably, you know, they won't be playing on Saturday, but they're thinking about Wednesday.
The focus and the game plan stuff is really interesting, because I was I've read a little bit and listened to a little bit about Golden State in the last week, and how the year they won the title, that lineup of death was like a shock weapon. You know, they wouldn't use it more than sort of 3 or 4 minutes a game, but in the season, because they were going for that 73 games record, they used it a lot more. And they almost finished with it, the season with it as their lineup. You know, they'd roll Bogut out for 10 minutes at the start of games, and then they go to the lineup.
It became plan A real quick.
Yeah. And the thing is with the NBA, it is so scrutinized and so, like, you know, you can throw a lot of resources. It basically gave opposing scouts and coaches a huge amount of ammunition on how to play it.
Yeah, they were going to find the exhaust port to send fucking Luke Skywalker down. To send the rocket right. up, and the Death Star was going to come down. That's exactly what was going to happen.
So part of the talk I've been hearing this week is, like, you know, obviously they're going to rest players a lot more, but how often are they going to play their optimal lineup with, you know, Iggy at the 3, Durant at 4, and Draymond at the 5? And the consensus seems to be not that fucking much, because they probably run it in scrimmage at practice and stuff a whole heap. But they probably won't roll it out, and they probably won't need to roll it out onto the court, to be honest. You know, you can pull Curry out here and you put Durant in, you're still going to win a heap of games.
Depends how keen they are in getting home court advantage right through the playoffs. But yeah, they'll be more circumspect than they were in the last year.
Well, I'm sure we'll get to that when we roll through our NBA picks pod, but I don't know who will really challenge them for that number one spot, because I don't think there is another team that's fully formed in the West. I just don't, like, I think every team in the West has potential.
The LA Clippers, like, a heap of teams. This is finally their year.
Well, like, even if the Clippers get home court, is anyone really scared of the Clippers in the finals?
Is anyone scared of Clippers, like, anytime, anywhere?
Yeah, if you finish second and the Clippers finish first and they had home court advantage, you're not exactly quaking in your boots, are you? So, Shall we pour a little out for Aussie Ben Simmons?
I was going to say, so Ben Simmons has been spending a lot of time on FIFA. I don't know whether he was already injured, because Ben Simmons has broken a bone in his foot. He's going to be out for about 8 to 10, probably more. But he was playing FIFA and tweeting his results, and he did like a 5-0 result playing with Barcelona. Said, you know, anytime, anywhere, I'm the best. And then Joel Embiid retweeted it and said, basically, kind of paraphrasing, what kind of pussy plays with Barcelona? What the fuck is this? And then a day or two later, I saw a tweet from Ben Simmons where he'd played as Melbourne City and it got 3-0. Nicely done, bro.
That's when you're having to work with the tools that you have.
Yeah.
So
he's got plenty of time to make Marconi Fairfield the champions of Europe. Now that he's on his ass for about 10 weeks.
I just feel for Brett Brown, man. That dude just cannot catch a break.
True, but half of those 8 weeks are not the season. So who gives a fuck?
That's right. And it's not like they're making finals anyway. All you want to do is...
Look, it's possible that they could be brilliant. The whole bunch of them could be brilliant and they could make a run at that. Because that eight...
There's
going to be a lot
bar.
Of teams going for it, and they're not going to be very good teams. Mm. It's going to be a whole lot of teams that are around 500, it was last year.
What was I going to say?
We're pouring a bit out. Let's pour a bit out for KG. Kevin Garnett retired.
Yes.
It's the end of his long career. It went a little bit sour with the Timberwolves at the end because I don't think he was terribly thrilled with the way the new broom came in post-Flip Saunders passing.
I find that, like, isn't he, like, mates with Thibodeau from the Celtics days? I found that really strange.
No, I don't think the issue was with Tibbs, but it's...
More the front office.
I don't know. Maybe it was just, you know, Flip. Maybe he's just upset because, you know, he never quite dealt with Flip going. But maybe he decided it wasn't his gig to do that sort of stuff. But you know, KG's not management material, really.
No.
He doesn't belong in a suit in meetings. He belongs on a sideline haranguing old mate from TNT about his shit wardrobe.
He'd probably make a really good assistant coach, but where I reckon he would be brilliant is as a minority owner. Like, can you imagine if you were a season ticket holder from the year before and KG rang you up and said, like, you will fucking buy season tickets or I will come round to your house and yell at you.
You're going to buy tickets? Oh, look, this gives me an excuse and I will do this. Show note to self. The thing where he went after Craig Sager for his uniform, for his outfit.
Yeah.
And he just says, look, listen, see this? I need you to take this home and burn it. Burn it all. Burn the jacket. I know you like it. It's just, you know, burn it. You need to take this and burn it. Even the shoes. Yeah, I know you like the shoes. Burn the shoes. Just go. Just burn.
Hey, speaking of
Craig Sager's
out,
still alive, so we can make that joke. He's only just hanging in, though, unfortunately. Derek Rose, fuck off, cunt, and take your fucking lawyers with you. That's all I need to say on that one.
Max Walker passing away has been
I don't read books like by Maxie Walker. I can't say words like Struth or Corker. I am the child of Woggs. R.I.P. Maxie Walker. Two-sport athlete,
young,
which is super rare these days, unless you're in women's sports, of course.
Yep. Well, it is almost a luxury of amateur or semi-professional sport, isn't it?
Yeah, Like
being a dual elite athlete.
Yeah.
Like
who was the last professional dual sport athlete? I mean, we're setting aside, I'm drawing a blank on the really, really good female cricketer and footballer.
Elise Perry.
Yes. Oh, my God. How did I draw a blank on her? But setting aside your Elise Perry types, who was the last great dual sport Australian
blanks,
or New Zealander?
The Kiwi guy is the guy that played cricket and rugby. He played test match rugby and cricket.
Geoff Wilson!
And Jonty Rhodes played...
He played hockey, cricket, yeah. Oh, I was, cricket, you know, I was thinking, and I think Jeff Walshon, because Jeff Walshon was a hero around here in these parts, because he's from Otago, eh? That's a fucking awful accent. No, but I will always remember Jeff Walshon for being crash tackled by George Gregan, because I'm from Australia. It doesn't matter what Jeff Walshon did in a fantastic career that spanned... He was actually, because he finished his rugby career and he came and he then went back to play for New Zealand in cricket the year I came over to New Zealand, which was 05. And it was like, my God, how are you? So that's probably the last dual international that I can think of. Yeah, except for like tin pot ones like rugby and your rugby league, which is basically...
Yeah, which is not really... That's the same skill set. Yeah. If you're going from AFL to cricket or rugby union to cricket, that's
part of why Jared Hayne was a big deal. I know Jared Hayne got a lot of press, but he was going between sports that weren't really that similar.
No, the difference being that he didn't succeed at the second sport.
And Jesus would have not succeeded at the second sport either, because Jesus...
But I tell you what, I have...
Max Walker. How the fuck are we talking about this?
The stories that have come out, and I actually think it's a great tribute to Walker, because he was such a good storyteller and he loved the embellishing. And
he made a career out of it. You know, he published for international viewers. Max Walker was a mediocre VFL footballer, quite a good Australian fast bowler. He was of the late 70s, early 80s. But what he really... made his career in subsequent to that, what he was a sports presenter with Channel 9. Not so much in, at least in my recollection, less so in the cricket commentary, but in the general sports presentation.
Yeah.
And he became a hero through the 12th man turning him into a central character in a lot of the stuff that he churned out like sausages full of flour and arseholes.
Which I actually went back and listened to this week. Some of the Max stuff was pretty funny. But the thing was that he actually was quite self-aware for a sportsman of that time, where he lost his first marriage to international cricket, essentially, because he was never home, started a commentary career with Channel 9 and basically went, I'm not going to do cricket because I've just got married again and I don't want to lose the second one. And you know, Ian Chappell, I think, is on his fourth wife. So
sure enough,
take from that what you will.
Interesting, there was a video. It was someone took a photo of the Channel 9 quiz that had like the Wild Water Sports quiz with the four presenters, and Chappell's the only one who's left. Yeah. The rest of them are all gone. You know, Mike Gibson's gone by his own hand, very sadly. And Maxie Walker's gone. But the thing is that he was also, I mean, he wasn't quite Richie Benaud level, but he was definitely a face of that era of cricket that made World Series cricket more palatable to a traditionalist audience.
Yeah.
But really what made him was the books he wrote and the ads he was in with you know, like the Tui's 2.2 ads with Dougie Walters and the AeroGuard commercials and things like that.
Some of those, that Tui's one was just hilarious.
But that's Dougie Walters. I mean, Dougie Walters has for a cricketer, he has actual comic timing, you know, as distinct from anybody who's ever been on the footy show.
Yeah. The interesting thing I find about with him and Benno is that as well as being cricketers, they were quite astute businessmen.
Yep.
Like Walker basically, like everyone sort of, you know, talks about his books and how he had a great publishing career, but he did that a lot himself, like the stories
that was
of him
DIY.
Loading up his car, going to a local sporting club, doing an after dinner talk, and then basically flogging his books off. Like those books are high up in the bestseller lists in Australian.
Oh look, in Australian, everyone's granddad had them. I know mine did. He had the full set of all the Maxie Walker's books, and you can see that evolved out of the after dinner speaker gig.
Yeah,
the sportsman's club gig.
I got a few of them for Christmas because I used to love the cricket books. You know, every year I would get at least one cricket book for Christmas. Some of them better than others, I would have to say. But he just had a real natural style. Actually,
there was a real industry around them, particularly in the 80s, I know, you know, yeah. Ian Chappell used to write books of sporting anecdotes, most of the anecdotes were racist and sexist and horrendously homophobic, but still funny, and most of them involved Ashley Mallett, much like his cricket commentary does.
Yeah. Chappell was pretty good. Maxie was pretty good.
Dougie Walters was also very good. If you can find Dougie Walters, Dougie Walters had a book called One for the Row that was quite good.
Alan Border's book was fucking terrible. He's not a good writer. I don't know if it was ghostwritten, but if it was ghostwritten, he should have fired these ghosts.
Yeah, he probably should have busted that ghost. Ironically, he's not a terrible commentator. He's quite... And he's not grumpy either, which is remarkable.
No, he's quite... He's quite even-handed too. Like, you know, after listening to having your brain assaulted by Channel 9 for so long, listening to a commentator that's, you know, actually has an objective view on the game is like, you know, dipping your fucking testicles into the Antarctic spring.
And it's weird because it's Alan Border, who you always thought of as this super angry, like the high school, like the principal at your primary school who used to hit kids with the cane, sort of, oh, I'm scared of that guy. And he turns at me, oh, I'm actually quite pleasant. Yeah, hello, I've got some interesting ideas. I'm like, dude, aren't you supposed to be a monster? Didn't you threaten to send Craig Dirt home for looking at you weird?
I think he is classic white line fever, Border.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a few guys that I've known through touch football, hate coaching, hate playing against, hate playing with, just absolute fucking maniacs that you cannot control off the field. And the loveliest, most generous guys off the field. Like, outside of a game situation, outside of those 40 minutes, be the one of the first guys I'd ring up for help. But in a game situation, fucking nuts. Absolutely crazy. Just some guys are wide like that.
Yeah, and we call them the mentally ill. Speaking of cricket, we left you last week, dear listener, with New Zealand actually doing well against India, which stopped happening immediately after we recorded the podcast. Basically, normal service resumed.
What's happened to your captain?
He's crook. He's not well.
He's just got deli belly?
I don't know whether he's the kind of ill that requires a cork or whether he's something else, but... So basically, normal service was resumed. Normal service of A, India in India, B, New Zealand playing five good sessions in a five-day test match. Having said that, they just bowled India out again. 316 or something. Yeah. Off we go again. You think, yay! And now they're 40-odd for 80. So get on New Zealand.
Oh, really? Wow.
Well, what it tells you is that maybe these Indian decks aren't the Indian decks that you remember. There are Indian decks you can get out on.
Oh, absolutely. I think the Indian decks, like, India have some really fucking good spin. It's a little bit like Australia and Sri Lanka. India have some very, very good spinners, and people from Australia and New Zealand aren't that good at playing fucking good spinners.
Well, they don't see those kind of spinners on those kind of decks, and when they go over there, they're not playing them under those conditions.
Well, India at the moment have the second fastest guy to 200 wickets, I think.
They do. It's Ashwin.
Who's a very
handy batsman as well.
And I think is slowly getting, like, he's always been a bit of a, you know, he's basically the Dave Warner of India, where he was amazing at home and not that much chop away.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be that good away. He's certainly not going
to
be.
I think he's slowly getting better. So it'll be very interesting to see the next time he comes down here whether he can actually play.
Wouldn't have thought so. He'll be about as useful as Nathan Lyon. He'll be less. If you grade them on a curve of zero to Nathan Lyon, he's going to be less good than Nathan Lyon. Because Nathan Lyon's quite good at getting the most out of tracks that are not doing anything for him.
Not spinning.
That's what he's good at. Unfortunately, if the deck is swimming spinning, he doesn't know what the fuck to do with it.
This one's turning square, Nathan. Oh, fuck.
This is not my special area. This is not what I've been selected for. There's been some... Can I chuck in some a bit of racing news?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Why did you send me a picture of a car with the Hunters and Collectors logo on it, by the way?
Just because I know that's in your area. I know that's in your wheelhouse. And I thought you might try to remaster it.
Why does a car have the Hunters and Collectors.
So near as I can tell, Hunters and Collectors are doing the, because every year at the Clipsal 500, which is the big Adelaide race that they starts the season, they have a big rock gig. And you know, they're like Hoot and Gurus and whoever else. And this year it must be the Hunters and Collectors. I hadn't realised they're reforming, but apparently they are. So if you like your Hunters, I think it's early March, get your ass out to Adelaide, and you might have to sit through some car racing, but you'll get some Hunters. I presume they'll be remastered in time for that sort of thing. But the V8 supercar people, sorry, the Virgin Australia supercar people, because it's not V8 anymore, even though it is, did something really clever. They went and grabbed one of the best young open-wheel race drivers in the world, and they signed them up to a league contract. So that a team doesn't own them. You know, a team doesn't employ them. The V8 supercar people employ them, and they find them out so they picked someone who was really good, an ex-IndyCar driver who has tested Formula One, really highly competitive. The real thing that makes it impressive is that she's female. So the best female driver in the world is going to be racing V8 supercars for the next couple of years.
Are they going to put her in a decent car?
They are. They're going to put her in probably, well, Simona Di Silvestro, who's Swiss but raced in the States for many years. She came out last year and did a one-off with another young Australian female driver. I don't like saying female because it sounds very sterile. Woman driver sounds patronising as well. It's funny how gendered language is, isn't it? But they did like the Harvey Norman Super Girls, which is even more patronising. And they ran a Ford Falcon with the Pro Drive team, which is the team that runs Mark Winterbottom and company. This year, the Harvey Norman team are going to run under Nissan's tent. And it's probable that Simona Di Silvestro will run one of the factory Nissans next year, which is a entirely competitive thing. The V8 supercars are a weird car compared to a lot of other race cars around the world. So they take a bit of getting used to. But people who have got experience in things like GT sports cars, have got a bit of a leg up. She hasn't done so much of that, so she might be at a bit of a disadvantage. But she's very good, and she will be. It's such a clever move because she was struggling to get a gig in some of these open wheel series where you've got to scrape your own sponsorship together, and they just thought, right, we'll have her.
She's
we'll
a talent.
Sign her, and we'll get some sponsorship, and we'll place her with the team because she is going to make our series much bigger just through her existence, which is it was just a really heads up move.
It'd be like going and getting, maybe Rossi's a bad example because he's such a big name, but like just going and poaching a racing talent from another series because they might not have a gig. It's like, oh, well, we'll just pay you and we'll figure out the details later.
Exactly. Even aside of the gender thing, if they'd gone and grabbed someone like someone who'd been in a smaller IndyCar team who is obviously quick, but had never had the budget or the team support to get further ahead. Because the problem is that when she was in IndyCar, so was Danica Patrick. And Danica was, you know, had more corporate support and was in better teams. She wasn't going any fucking faster.
That sponsorship dollar, basically.
Yeah, she was more the reality was she was more marketable. I think Simona's quicker than Danica, right? In fact, I don't have any crimes in saying that. Danica is a road racer by her background. Danica Patrick's now has been in NASCAR for the last couple of years, atrophying and not really achieving much, which is kind of sad because she's better than that. And her skill set, there's been plenty of really good road racers who've gone to NASCAR and been mediocre, and she's certainly one of them. But the sad thing is that gets attributed to her gender rather than the fact that Jacques Villeneuve, Formula One world champion, couldn't do anything in NASCAR. Juan Montoya, great Formula One and IndyCar champion, couldn't do anything in that series. So she's kind of lost in NASCAR now. But Simona is going to do really great things in V8 supercars. Maybe not next weekend at Bathurst, but certainly
by the end of the season.
Certainly. Well, she's going to start next season. She'll be full-time. So Watch the space.
I wonder whether the NBL had ever considered, like we've talked before about that young kid from the States that's going to be playing for the Tigers, or they're not Tigers anymore, what are they called, Melbourne United or whatever, next year.
Southeast Melbourne United Magic Dragons.
I just,
why are they not the fucking Tigers? That was an iconic name.
The team from Melbourne in the NBL is the Tigers.
Bring back the Southeast Melbourne Magic.
What the fuck are you guys doing? But wouldn't it be interesting if the NBL just went, as the NBL just went to the States and just started throwing contracts at young high school stars and went, we'll figure out what team you're going to play on later. Like, yeah. we'll make the salary cap
designated imports work,
but you know, hey,
the MLS does this. Like, the MLS used to do this in American soccer. They used to do this. They used to find really good players and then find them a home subsequently, farm them out to, you know, draft them. You know, there'd be almost like a draft style system. One of the things that's interesting about Simona's gig is that she's going to get paid probably more than an entire women's AFL team. Which is really cool, because she's on, I think they were talking mid 300,000s.
Which talk about subverting the narrative, because supercars is not exactly the sport you would associate.
But they get paid really well because Garth Tander. So they were saying, you know, James Corden. So the Holden Racing. We were talking previously about the Holden Racing team who are not going to be the Holden Racing team next year. Because Holden are taking the factory badge off them and giving it to the Triple Eight team. So the Red Bull team and the Holden Racing team have been the two factory Holden teams for a little while. Holden are just going to keep it with the Red Bull team, and what is the Holden Racing team will just go back to being Walkinshaw Racing or something. So, not necessarily related to that, but they figured that they couldn't afford to keep both Garth Tander and James Courtney. It turns out, Tander's on $700,000 a year, and Courtney's probably on nearly $1 million a year. Yeah.
Handy money.
Handy fucking money. But so, in order to keep... Courtney was getting offers from Japanese Super GT, which is kind of a cross between touring car racing and surface-to-air missiles. If you ever get a chance to watch any Super GT, it's fantastic stuff. It's a bit like... to be fair, it's more like a cross between, say, our touring car series and the Le Mans prototypes, because they've got these things that look like touring cars, but really they're ridiculously quick. They're as quick as the cars they run at Le Mans. Courtney has a history in Super GT. He used to race for Toyota there before he came back and raced in touring cars. So he was basically he had another offer, so his salary was always going to stay up. So they held on to him. They released Tander and they signed some other young bloke who was out of a gig who was going to be cheap. So Tander with his $700,000 a year salary is going to have to go somewhere else.
So basically what you're saying, it's like touring cars, but if the guy that directed Fast and the Furious got to decide how the cars
were set up. V8 Supercars Tokyo Drift. It's almost literally. Well, they're a bit like the German DTMs, but they go ridiculously quick. One other thing about the V8 Supercars is that they've decided to have a race in Newcastle to finish the season. And it's around the city centre, and it's going to be tight as fuck, and there's going to be lots of NIMBYs kicking off about it. But if it works, it's going to be fed. It's going to look tremendous because it's right out on the point. The helicopter shots will just be tremendous. It's kind of the thing that you can see why the tourism board are behind it, but sure as fuck, the people that live there are going to be so pissed off about it.
No one's ever happy with big events. Like, I wouldn't be happy if a big event rocked up on my back door.
Really, Queensland started running a stage up your road.
Yeah, but Newcastle isn't exactly swimming with investment opportunities.
Not exactly, no. Last time I thought about Newcastle was when I was watching... when I was watching Man City play in the Champions League, because they were wearing one of those fuck-awful Nike third kits. I don't know whether I whinged about this on Twitter a bit, but Nike are putting all their clubs into shitty third kits for European games, and they look like fucking distress signals. So the one they've put Man City into is like bright orange red at the top, and then it gradients into a blue, a bit like those Newcastle jerseys of the early 90s. Newcastle Knights jerseys. You know that crappy 90s gradient effect where they just have little intersecting blocks? So they've decided that's a thing. And as a result, Manchester City, who have won every game they've played this year, drew with Celtic. So basically, if you dress like a fuckwit, you'll play like a fuckwit. Say no to shitty Nike third kits. This is the same sort of kit that Inter Milan lost at home playing against bumfuck from Uzbekistan against.
Yeah, no, they're not attractive strips, so... all right, you got anything else, Doc? Considering we're over an hour already.
We are pretty much done. So
that was pretty
so
good.
Oh, who do you like? So just to finish, who do you like in the big granny tomorrow?
Who's not Cronulla?
Yeah, it's a bit
anyone
like,
but Cronulla.
Anyone but Cronulla. Yeah. And the thing is that when you got two clubs in there that you don't like, and I know you're kinder towards the Purple Queensland than I am, at least you can enjoy one of them getting flogged.
Yeah, I do want to do one little last bit of AFL. The
can we talk about morons doing lazy Leicester City comparisons?
No. Let's not talk about that. Let's finish on a positive.
There's nothing. Can we just point out just how stupid it is? Because I was just waiting for someone to drop this. Someone saying, this is just like Leicester City. No, it fucking isn't just like Leicester City. Leicester City won a 38 round competition by 10 points. You guys got won 4 games in a row. Good on ya. Really fucking hard work.
Well, no, it is hard work because they won from 7th, which is almost impossible in the modern AFL.
Well, but it happens every second year in the NFL.
Yeah, but the NFL's not the same sort of comp. I just think
it's exactly the same sort of comp. It's a parity-capped league with one-off knockout finals. Exactly the same sort of finals format. And wild cards win the Super Bowl regularly. They knock off the team that has the bye regularly.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen in the AFL.
But there's like, no reason the why team. It's it, there's no reason why it shouldn't. Whereas no, Leicester winning a 38 round tournament by 10 points, having been having come from League 2 15 minutes ago. It just does not even come close to being comparable.
Well, it's just not. They're different sports. It's a different comp. They're both really impressive things, especially since the Bulldogs haven't won for fucking 50 years or whatever.
A lot of that's down to bad management and being broke and almost going out of business a lot.
It's just not. They're just different things and celebrate them as different things. Now, what I wanted to say was... the Bulldogs have
syphilis.
A really great bloke as their leader, and he had a bad injury and had to basically sit out the rest of the season, and their coach gave up his premiership medal to Bob Murphy on the podium, and I just thought that's a really nice gesture. I agree with you that the AFL probably should have given Murphy
Was either the most recent or the one before that. Two guys, one cut with Will Anderson and normally with Charlie Clawson, but this one was with Michael Chamberlain of the Junk Time podcast, talking about the fact that why don't they just give medals to people who have made considerable contributions to the success of the season who didn't necessarily get to play in the grand final? And rugby league's in the same situation. I mean, the story we told last week of Jonathan Thurston giving up his winner's medal to Steve Price, who played the whole year for Canterbury in 04 and then was injured for the final. And I think it's a cultural difference where in the Australian comps, it's much more like in England, whereby you either have a cup final winner's medal or you don't. Whereas if you've played the whole season, things that are decided across a season, your contribution to the season matters.
The NBA realised that You don't just win that grand final in that one game.
Well, there is no grand final. You win a series.
Yeah,
but that series is a series among series.
Even if you win that 7-game series, like the NBA give out a ring, well, the teams give out a ring to any player that played a single minute for that team in that season. So there was a guy this year or last year Oh yeah, Varejao from the Golden State Warriors. If Golden State he gets a ring no matter what, because he played for the Cavs and then he played for the Golden State Warriors. So he gets a ring. Like, I'm sure he's not going to flash it around Golden State training, but you know he still gets a ring because he contributed to that season.
Also, and I don't know if he chose to be traded.
No, that's absolutely not. That's right. Like, and I'm sure he gave his all for the Cavs when he was at the Cavs, because that's the sort of player
until he
is.
Got injured, which was like 30 seconds later.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes giving your all is not necessarily on the field. But yeah, I sort of was like, that coach might never win a premiership again, so that's his one chance.
It's only a bit of jewelry, but you still remember. It's not like you suddenly haven't won the fucking title. They don't let you go and stand on the stage at the fucking Witten Oval and go, "Yeah, I won the fucker." It's just a trinket that goes with it.
You and I know that, mate. But there is a lot of people that wouldn't do the same thing. A lot of people.
Oh look, I think someone was going to give Bob Murphy something.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Bob Murphy was getting something.
Yeah. All right, Doc. Give us the numbers. Whereas the letters.
If he got, maybe he should get the percentage of a ring that he played of the season.
Yeah.
Because basically he was a teddy bear this year, wasn't he?
I think he played like six games or something like that.
He played long enough for them to feel like he was important to win the tournament. Where in fact he turned out to be completely dispensable and they should flick him on. If they're a responsible club or looking to the future, they obviously need to sack every one of their players who was injured because they're dispensable. Dead weight.
Let's see how well North Melbourne did after they made that decision.
Yeah.
Straight out.
We'll see how well South Melbourne have done since they moved to slightly north of Melbourne.
Mm.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Balls podcast. Yes, you did that to yourself. Don't expect our fucking sympathy. I'm the Doc. He's the Bezo. You can find us on the Twitters and on the Facebook at the Balls Podcast. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes or on whatever Android platform that you like listening to. Bezo has some cool shirts that advertise the Balls Podcast if that's the sort of thing you would like to do.
And the fact that I am always wrong.
Yeah, you have to pay extra to discover that he's always wrong, whereas you can just listen to the podcast and discover that for free. The link for that is at lantanaland.com. Follow the links to the Balls Podcast with Bezo and Dr. Yobbo. There's also the show notes for this podcast and all of our podcasts, which have lots of cool links and bits and pieces and added value and fun stuff.
I was actually talking to someone about the show notes yesterday and saying the show notes are funny because they tell you absolutely nothing before you
show notes
to the show.
Live in a different universe. They live in a universe that's been through the filter of my brain.
But once you've actually listened to the show and you go back and read the show notes, they actually add a lot of value. You just have to go back after you've read you've listened
to
the show.
Well, then they're meta. Well, the thing is that you don't want show notes that give away what you're going to hear about. But you want show notes that make you interested in finding out what it's about.
All right, Doc, I'll catch you on the flip side.
You will. Thanks, folks. Catch you next week.